Today's episode of Robin's Podcast is sponsored by jackthreads.com. Now, as a fashion challenged man, it is always a chore for me to go ahead and buy clothes online. It's tough to go to the store because I don't have the time. And then it's also tricky to buy things online because first off, I don't know how something is going to fit on me and my very unique body type. And also, it's hard to say without having somebody there with me to say, what is this? What do you think? Is this Nicole? Should I get this? JackThreads takes all of the guesswork out of online shopping because you can try anything you want that you see on the website in your home for free, whether it's a big name brand or a JackThreads in-house line. You can try it out at your home to be sure 100% you're in love with the items before you spend a cent. On top of that, you'll have 7 days to decide if it's working for you. JackThreads gives you everything you need to send things back, including packing tape and a prepaid shipping label. So you can go ahead and try on whatever you want that you see on the website. So go ahead and give it a shot, risk-free. Go to jackthreads.com. Use our promo code RHAP when you submit your tryout for 20% off anything that you keep. That's jackthreads.com. Use the promo code RHAP and you'll even save 20% off anything you decide to keep from the store. So you don't have to buy before you try ever again at jackthreads.com. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back here with another edition of everybody's favorite room in the house, the Wiggle Room.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle. Yes,
sir.
Blur. Blur.
Me. Yes.
It's me. I'm doing the dance. I'm doing the dance. There's no Snapchats to authenticate the fact that I am doing the dance, but you will just have to trust that I am indeed wiggling and still wiggling as I'm saying these words.
That's disgusting.
Oh, why is that so gross? It's my signature move. Oh my God, I'm so self-conscious now. Oh no, I'm gonna have to change my move.
Yes, Josh.
Maybe I should change my name. Figgler? Is Figgler taken?
Figgler.
Is Figgler open?
Figgler would be not bad.
That
would
be the Figgle room. Other things happen in there. Also pretty gross.
Yes. Josh, welcome back and excited to take a quick pit stop here in the Wiggle Room. A little late in the week. We're actually recording this Tuesday morning. Normally we record this probably like 48 hours earlier in Survivor week.
But, apologies. Totally my fault. It was a really, really long weekend for me. We were, you know, supposed to record on Sunday, but I had a lot going on. I was in Burlington, Vermont this weekend, Rob, for a wedding, which was very fun. Burlington's a good town. I like Burlington. Anyone who's from Burlington, you guys have a pretty cool town. And then I was on a really quick red-eye trip to San Diego for TwitchCon. And then I flew back from there. So it's been a lot has been happening. A lot's been going on here.
What, you were at TwitchCon over the weekend? I didn't even know that you were into any sort of streaming gaming that's going on.
Well, I'm not really. I mean, sometimes I like to watch like old school RPGs being streamed. That's really fun for me. But no, your
RPG.
Friend and mine. Yeah, RPG. Hey, by the way, great podcast with PG.
Yes.
Just going to say, that was really good. No, but your friend and mine, Jason Somerville, you know, obviously he's a big deal on Twitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had flown me out. We hung out. We had a really good time at TwitchCon. He wanted me to come check out. He'd gotten an invitation to a party at TwitchCon that he thought that I would be pretty psyched to go to. And indeed, I was. Rob, it was the farewell party for Mari Takahashi at TwitchCon. She was there as well.
Oh, what, that farewell to Survivor?
Yes, farewell to Survivor. It was like her big Survivor farewell party. It was really, really fun. Catered, you know, really good food, really good music. Music that might be familiar to people who've been here in the Wiggle Room, actually. Do you remember Anna Kate's rave last year that I attended?
Yes.
Yeah. So they got the same musical guest from Anna Kate's rave. I wasn't supposed to do this, but I recorded it if you want to listen to the audio from that.
They're mom making out. Biggs and Taylor, it's true, are about to get down. It's so nasty cold. Sandy drawers and tentacles. The freaks and geeks in millennial buff. are sure what they need. Vic is torched against nothing's romantic nights. Are about to say goodnight. Oh, hey, wait, just kidding, guys.
Hey, Wanda.
It's the biggest blindside of the season so far. Sorry, Mari, Takahashi, Michelle put together enough votes to blindside Mari. Mari, Takahashi, Hannah changed her mind and destroyed all your winner picks and mine. Mari, you're still famous, so try not to feel so salty. Mari, Takahashi.
Yeah, so a really great great night. It was Lady Wawa was back in action. It was really fun to hear her after a long hiatus. So that was, it was a really, really great party. It was really cool.
Wow. Yeah.
I got to get my hands on a new video game that Mari is developing, which is pretty cool.
Oh, but she's doing her own game?
Yeah, she's doing her own game. It's called Survivor Mari Takahashi, where she just goes around. It's basically, it's really limited. It's not, there's not a lot to it. You know, like that, that challenge in Survivor Africa where you're rolling around this gigantic ball down a hill and you're trying to get it through obstacles. It's basically like that. And the goal is to like pick up as many of the obstacles as possible. And the ball just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And you just want to get like the most gigantic ball that you possibly can. I recorded a little bit of a demo of the game if you want to hear what that's all about.
Survivor Mari Takahashi.
So it's a really, really cool game that I think people are really going to like if they go and seek it out. Survivor Mari Takahashi, really good. Very, very Razer-specific intersection for the people who like Survivor Mari Takahashi and the classic video game Katamari Damacy. That's probably the thinnest stretch that has ever existed
much,
here in the Wiggle
pretty
Room.
Much every single person who listens to this podcast,
it's going to be really good for six people. Six people are really going to love that.
Six people are going to be tweeting about their favorite episode of the Wiggle Room ever.
If that did not work for Mark Solera, then I'm screwed. So that's pretty much, that's the litmus test right now. That's where we're at. That's where we're at. So I'm here. We're back.
We're
that's
back.
It. That's
All
it.
Right.
That's it. End of podcast.
All right, here we are, Josh, 2 weeks into the millennials and the Gen Xers. I thought it was a real coming out party for the show this week and for the season. What did you think about episode two?
I loved it, although I was devastated by the second boot of the season.
Your
being
winner,
my winner
pick, right?
Yeah. I know. I mean, I've had it worse. You know, the first time I ever got to go on location for Survivor, I picked Vetus to win, and then I watched him get voted out 3 days later. So it's hard to get lower than that. But this sucked. It wasn't great. It wasn't great. But I take solace knowing that I am far from being the only person who called Mari as a winner pick, and the only person who is feeling especially salty that she got kicked off so fast. That aside, great episode. Great episode other than that.
Let me tell you about one of your Mari winner pick brethren, because Nicole Stradamus,
of course,
famously also made Mari Takahashi her winner pick.
How'd
but
she
she's
feel?
Doing
how
this thing where... that I keep asking her, hey, did you watch Survivor yet? She's like, no, I haven't watched it. So now I'm either in the position to really call her out on that she actually does know that Mari was kicked off, or potentially spoiling the episode for her. And I never want to be the person who is like intentionally spoiling something for someone. So she's really got me in a very precarious position. But it's a smart move. Like, I used to do this like when the Jets would get like blown out and have like a terrible loss like they always do. That I used to do a thing like, especially to the terrible Patriots who are very mean fans. And then they all come on my Facebook page and be like, hey, nice Jets, loser. idiot, stupid Jets fan. And so,
wow, yeah, they're very nasty, these people.
Yes, yes. And back in, I believe it might have been the 2010 season, I posted on my Facebook, the Jets lost a terrible game on a Monday night to the Patriots. And I put on my Facebook page, like, hey, DVRing the game, nobody tells me what happens. And then,
but that's only going to hold for a little while, right?
Because
eventually you have to watch the thing. And then, you know, with football, it's only one game per week, too. So, like, eventually, like, that story isn't totally going to die. Like,
it worked, eventually Josh. It worked. It kept the Patriots fans at bay. Yes.
Wow.
Love you, Bay. Yes.
I love you, Bay. Okay. Love you, Green Bay. Yeah, so I think that's interesting. That's an interesting move. I feel like with Nicole, eventually, you know, she's either going to have to watch the episode or the statute of limitations on spoilers is over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, being that Nicole Stradamus can see the future, she probably already is aware of this.
Yeah. We have to go back and do some research, figure out when the last time my winner pick outlasted Nicole's in the game. So that's that'll be fun.
Feeling okay about that. You're feeling pretty
well,
good.
Well, I'm sad because I really liked Mari. I wanted her to go far into the game. But that's the
only
solace.
They got a lot of Mari in for while she was in the game, though, right? I mean, like, two episodes, and Mari was really the narrator of the millennial theme for the time that she was in the show, certainly in the premiere, and I think probably a quieter second and final episode for her, but I still felt right up until the end, like, I thought Mari was okay. It really started turning right around puppies and butts for me. Puppies and butts, that's when you're like, oh, that's a bad look. Final words are going to be puppies and butts. That's when I kind of figured that something was a miss. But up until then, I really didn't think that it was going to be Mari going home.
She was definitely one of the people that was giving production what they wanted in terms of, like, so as a millennial, what does it mean to be blah, 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 blah? And she was very good at answering those questions.
She was great at answering those questions. Like, being a millennial is the best thing ever. Playing video games and watching things on TV is one thing, but having to do this in person is crazy. Like, she was very, very, very keyed in on the theme. Who's going to pick up the torch in that regard? Who is going to be carrying the millennial banner going forward?
And maybe to her detriment, where I think that maybe she was looking at it too much of millennials versus Gen X, as opposed to millennials versus millennials, which was ultimately her undoing in the game.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would say that in terms of, like, gameplay or anything. I know you brought this up. Like, did Mari do anything specifically wrong to get voted out? And I have not yet had the chance to listen to Why Mari Lost by David Bloomberg. But did you ever come down with it being specifically Mari's fault for getting kicked out here?
No, but I don't think that she was ever aware that she was a potential target. And I really don't think that she was doing quite enough to sort of make relationships with other people that might have been targeting her in terms of a threat, where a lot of the other players said that they felt like she was friends with them, but not necessarily talking strategy with some of these people that were on the fence, like Hannah and Will. And
right.
So they had, like, a friendly relationship with her, but she wasn't quite doing enough to shore up the relationships with other potential people who could have flipped against her.
That's probably it. Like, that's got to be, like, the biggest knock. But
she was a threat.
And I felt like you could have made the argument for it having been Zeke or Adam, too. Like, it could have been any one of those three. They really just needed to knock one of those three out, as long as it wasn't anybody else in the crew. And it landed on Mari, I think, because she was threatening. But I think that you could argue the same for Adam and Zeke. So I don't know. It was a wild vote. You know, I'm trying to think of the last time, you know, outside of an all-star type of season, that the second person voted out was such a surprise to me in terms of somebody who I thought had real potential as a player and was already demonstrating playing a fairly solid game.
What about Garrett Adelstein?
I know, that was just what I was thinking in terms of, like,
another
the winner
gamer.
Sure. But I think that manifested over the course of the 2-hour premiere of Gagayan, that you had a little bit of time to watch that train go off the rails. So I don't know. I feel like Mari's got Wentworth upside, though, right? Like, if they did Second Chance 2, you know, I feel like you could put Mari on that ballot. Mari's got the online fan base to get her back on the show. And I could see her doing really well. There's no reason to be, you know, remarkably afraid of her, though you probably did see more of Mari's game in 2 episodes than you saw of Kelly Wentworth in 5 episodes of San Juan del Sur.
Well, I think that Mari does have that sort of upside, where I think that she does have the social skills, and certainly I think the physical skills in the challenges to be able to compete at a high level. And if she could just learn the game, and I always say that's the easiest thing to teach somebody who doesn't know Survivor, just to okay, that's how it works, especially somebody who is able to pick up games quickly.
Right.
I think that she certainly would be well suited. I just would worry about her in a second time out that people would still think she was a threat.
It depends on who else was out there. You know, it depends on what that field is. But I think that, again, like in two episodes, you know a lot more about how Mari plays the game than you knew about Wentworth in five episodes. So she doesn't have quite as many places to hide, probably. But what are you going to do? I do think, you know, kudos to Survivor for completely, you know, fooling me on that. I really thought that, you know, based on Mari is one of the first people you're seeing in the season tease back in May. She's one of the first confessionals in the premiere, and then she's knocked out in the second episode. I never would have called that. Never in a million years. So,
Josh, it was your winner pick. Like you picked Michelle last season. It's okay. Nobody thinks any less of you that you had a bad winner pick this time.
I wonder if I should shift to the new Michelle. Is that the move now? I mean, that was impressive. I thought that she was just going to be dragons and butts, if not puppies. But that was pretty slick what she did in this episode.
Well, yeah, I mean, she really put it all on a silver platter for you. I mean, you're Mr. Game of Thrones. She's talking to you about dragons in the preseason. You slept on the mother of dragons.
Hey, watch out. She is showing herself to be the true Khaleesi here on the Millennial Tribe, rallying the forces, rallying the troops. No. Certainly not. No, but she even has like the Khaleesi look with like the single braid, the way she wears the buff. You know, I feel like I could see some Daenerys Targaryen in Michelle's game. So I don't know. I'm happy with how things played out. Disappointed that my winner pick is gone. Makes me feel a little bit more free to just kind of enjoy the season and see where it takes me without having a real rooting interest in anything. Disappointed that I am I'm outgunned in the legacy advantage draft right now because I did have Mari. So now I only have two bullets in the chamber.
Uh-oh. Okay. Boy, I don't even remember one person I have on my team, I think.
Yeah, I don't know who the other two are, but I know that I had Mari, so we'll figure that out. Someone will let us know.
But that being said, so all right, so you mentioned Michelle, and she was the person who really, she got the fishy this week. She was the person who really turned the worm around for Figgy and company for the Triforce. So in terms of her story and her character, I mean, where do you see this going? Like, what's the upside for her?
Well, I'm surprised just because I struggle to remember like a weirder interview that I've had, just not even just in Survivor, just generally, than with Michelle in the pregame and drawing.
And you've interviewed
a dragon.
Nick Cage.
Yes, I have. And Kermit the Frog and a few other people. And this was very strange. You know, just the drawing of the dragon and everything else, and just her philosophy on life was so unique and not what I had expected at all. And that side of her, I don't think has really come out on the show too much. She seems like she's really, really well connected on this tribe and people really like her. And she was able to pull a move like this off. You know, she, in concert with Jay, and I'd love to talk about Jay because I was impressed with Jay this week. I think that, you know, the two of them, they really were able to sort of rally some unexpected forces together. The way she handled Will was really good. The way that she was able to draw Hannah over to her side was really bold. The fact that these two were able to bring Michaela onto their side. So the downplaying of her quirkiness, I'm wondering about that and really showing up how strong she was in the vote. I think that shows that she's a player to be reckoned with here. And I would not have called that going into the season.
Okay, so you brought up Jay. I think that a lot of Survivor fans were very quick to give credit to Michelle this week, but I think that a lot of people, myself included, not as fast to give a lot of the credit to Jay. Where do you stand on Jay in all of this?
I think that we're still out on who is the Triforce of Courage and the Triforce of Power, but I think we figured out of the three of them who is the Triforce of Wisdom, and I'm going to give that to Jay.
Okay.
I think Jay, you know, Jay was the only one of the three of them to be like, why are you doing this? Stop making out. My dude has already kissed her. Why? You know, he saw that as being a bad thing and, you know, bringing a nuclear bomb-sized target on their alliance. And I you know, obviously, I don't think that it takes a rocket scientist to figure that out because that should it should be a clear no, Fincher rules. But I think that, you know, the way that he went to Figgy and the way that he talked to Michaela, and he seemed to really be close with Michelle. And when Michelle is bringing in Hannah, at Tribal Council, Jay instantly knows what's up. Like, he's trying not to burst out laughing because he knows immediately what Michelle is doing with Hannah, as if it was a coordinated strike. So I feel like he was a co-pilot on that. I think that Jay was a co-pilot on this vote. I think that he was a big part in turning this thing around against Mari. And even when, you know, he's the first person that Probst throws to when that side conversation is happening between Jay and Michelle and Hannah. Jay is the guy who's, you know, thrown the question of what the hell is going on over here? What's this conversation all about? And he has a pretty good pivot of just being like, you know, we're young, we're excited, we're at Tribal Council, this is a big deal. And he's good at misdirecting that. So I don't know. I think that, you know, we talked who has longer legs in the game, Taylor or Jay last week. And I feel good about saying Jay. I feel like Jay showed some game awareness this week. I was excited about that. I also like that he looks like Dustin from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Seriously, pull up a side-by-side. It's pretty alarming. Now, and his name is Justin, so maybe that's why he has changed it to Jay, so it's not quite as obvious that he's hiding in plain sight.
Yes. Now, Jay was also upset about the sudden romance between Figgy and Taylor. Here's what he had to say about that.
Sometimes women blind you, and then you end up stuck with a woman, and you're bailing on your boys when it's bowling night, and you're...
Now, Josh, is it Survivor Bowling Night?
No one is allowed to bail on Survivor Bowling unless you have uneven tribe numbers.
Is Dave Ball coming over with Shambo?
Yeah, Coach is there as well. Coach is there. He's really getting antsy because the pizza hasn't shown up yet.
And he's very upset about Survivor Bowling.
Yeah, Colby's there. He's really not that good. You would think he'd be better at Survivor Bowling.
No.
Maybe I know that you keep thinking about, like, what is the reality game master's follow-up? And I liked your game night that you arrived at with PG, but Survivor Bowling, you might want to think about that.
That might be fun. So then going back to what Jay feels about this showmans, Josh, it's been quite some time since we had a true Survivor couple to talk about. And the new Survivor It couple that everybody's talking about, it's Figgler, it's Failer.
Where are we landing on that? Failer, Lovey Faye?
Well, PG branded Failer. So okay. I feel like that in respect to PG, I have to stick with Failer.
As always, I will always do what PG says.
Right. All right. So you have Figgy and you have Taylor and you have this romance. And here we are. We have people hooking up on the island.
In the Cuddle Shack, Miss Cuddle Shack, as Michaela calls her. Yeah, this is problematic. This is a problem. This isn't great. This has to break up at some point, you'd have to think, but maybe not with the fact that they were able to survive this vote. I certainly would have thought that this is especially in this day and age of Survivor, you would think that that's an automatic out, but no, they are sticking through for a little while. When was the last one? Did we figure what this was? Was it Keith and Whitney? Is that the official most recent Survivor couple?
I believe so. Okay. That's like the
not
actual...
counting Pete Bro and Abby.
Yes. Yes.
That was legit. That's legit. Or, you know, blood
well,
versus Pete water.
Pete Bro and Abby weren't a thing on the island.
Yeah, and we're not counting anyone from Blood versus Water because that's cheating.
Right. So that's not really the case. Yeah. And then also you have different people like between like, you know, Eddie and Andrea, you know, but that again, that's like more of like a flirt man than an actual couple, especially when we get into like people hooking up on the show. This is, you know, rarefied air for Figgy and Taylor. But it does
feel like it sort of feels like that cool kid group from Caramo and you bring up Eddie and like it just feels like it's that thing that happened all over again with like the Reynold and Allie and Eddie and Hope, except successfully. Like they actually are pushing forward and things are working out for them improbably.
Well, Josh, what I want to ask about is Zeke mentioned something about how like, hey, we're millennials. We hooking up, it's just not that big of a deal for us.
Right.
And
right.
So even though Figgy was the target, enough people ended up changing their vote where they said, okay, let's keep these two people that are together in the game and we'll figure it out later. But do you feel like that no matter what happens in these next couple episodes, that this is going to be short-lived and that the Gen Xers will quickly stomp on this when you're a jaded Gen Xer like me and you see happy people in love?
Yes.
Don't you want to put an end to it as quick as possible?
Yeah, as a jaded millennial, I would want to, you know, put a stop to that pretty fast. So, of course, 100%. Yeah, I think that they're remarkably lucky that things worked out for them. And, like, kudos to Michelle and Jay for pulling that together, but, you know, zero kudos to Failure. I don't think that they really did anything to save their necks, at least nothing that we were shown. So yeah, I think unless they've got Michelle and Jay really, really advocating for them, or somebody else really coming on their side, and I don't know who that would be, considering Michaela hates Figgy, and even Will was reluctant to do this, and Hannah was reluctant to be on board with this idea, I don't know who's going to champion on their behalf. And sooner or later, this is going to get busted up, and I would bet on sooner. I would bet on either Figgy or Taylor or both of them going out before the merge for sure.
So do you feel like that the Figgy and Taylor storyline is one that goes on for a lot? Like, is this just a pre-merge romance, something that's like a blip on the radar? How big of a story is this in the season?
Well, are we talking past the season? Because I don't know. Who knows?
Oh, who knows? I really haven't dug deep into looking to see if they're like together in like social media pictures or anything like that. So I really have no idea.
I'm not obsessing about it. No paparazzi shots that I have been sifting through, or Mari Takahashi photos that I have been sifting through. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows how that's going to go? I think this feels to me like early season story material. Like, I feel like as the season develops, that's when like you're starting to mix millennials and Gen Xers together, and the game is getting more complicated, and relationships are getting intertwined and really tangled up. And I don't think that we're going to have a lot of time to remain caught in a net here with Taylor and Figgy. Okay. So I think that's going to get cut down pretty soon. It's just a matter of when.
Okay. So Josh, are you basically predicting that Figgy and Taylor are a modern day Kim Mullen and Jeff Wilson?
I feel like Chunk from Goonies right now. Unbelievable. Why are you bringing that into the Wiggle Room?
Well,
get your Survivor Palau showmance out of here. Yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Maybe more entertaining than that, because those guys were awful. The worst. The
My Jeff that sucks. Stuff.
Yeah. Now bring that back. Yeah. Okay. Now we're good. Now we're good again.
If you want to bring back,
bring some James Miller in here and we're okay.
Bring back something from Oolong. But I mean, yes. If you're looking for a pre-merge showmance that, you know, got together and then got people against them, I think then that's probably where you want to look for that.
We'll need to ask Wanda about these pre-jury trip
Lady
stories.
Lady Wawa.
Yeah, Lady Wawa might have the scoop on what's going on at Ponderosa. Yeah, I guess that for me, as reluctant as I am to continue evoking the names of Jeff and Kim, I do think that that's probably the touchstone that I'd be looking at. I certainly hope it's not Keith and Whitney, because that means they're here for a
Friends
little while. Friends of the podcast, Keith and Whitney. No, yeah. I'm sure they're lovely individuals, but I get your showmance off my Survivor. I'm out on that. Not a fan. Showmance Raider. Before we leave millennials, can we just take a moment to bow down to Michaela, who is so terrific in confessional, and just the things that she's saying are so fantastic. And what she's saying with her eyes when she's not talking as well.
She's fantastic. She is absolutely wonderful to have on our TV sets. We're very lucky.
Very good stuff. I don't know why she and Figgy are, you know, at world war with each other. I don't know
this
where
girl
that
is dumb.
Yeah, I don't know where that's really coming from. But it was fantastic. I'm so happy. I love Michaela being so angry. She's the audience surrogate out there right now.
She's all of us.
She is all of us. So is Adam, you know, screaming at us in confessional, no showmances. You know, I think that that's pretty good as well. But Michaela is really, really articulating my frustration with this pretty well. So thank you for existing, Michaela.
Yes. At this point, I could listen to Michaela read the phone book.
Yeah. Yes. No, she's great. She's very funny.
All right. So let's talk about the Gen Xers. And really, only two storylines pretty much going on at Gen X this week. One is the continued emergence of David, I believe, in the game. Like, I feel like that this is a story where David's stock is on the rise. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was plummeting in the premiere. Oh, God, rock bottom. And a sharp turn upward here in episode 2. Like, it's not even just that he found the idol, which is obviously a big deal, and that's great, and congratulations to David, but he starts the fire. That's a great sign. That's, you know, some social collateral, or at least it's, you know, that sort of humanizing moment that people love to see. You know, we got that with Zeke last week, and now David's the fire starter here on Gen X. And he's broing down with my boy Ken. So, like, you know, it seems
Wait,
like things
Ken's
are,
your boy?
I love Ken. Big fan. Who's not a fan of Ken? We're all fans of Ken.
I thought you were just so on Ken. I didn't know that you were. That was your boy. You called it.
Oh no, he's just a handsome Ken. Mm. How could you be out on Ken? Are you out on Ken?
I'm not out on him. I'm probably, a little bit indifferent to warm on Ken. I'm just very surprised to hear that you are so pro Ken that he officially became your boy.
Yeah, I have many boys. We can have more than one friend here. You can have more than one person that you think is doing well out here. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with Ken. Very happy with Ken. As long as Ken is on my TV screen, I'm very happy. That's going to be a very good thing for me and several other people. But no, David is doing well. David had a really good episode too, for sure. And it's very funny as well. That moment where he's basically wishing ill on Paul was maybe a troubling look in terms of moving him closer towards that Lex Luthor type that we were talking about last week, but definitely emerging as a big character to watch this season.
Okay, and then in terms of the idol in the coconut, Josh, did you like how
you
this
put
was
the
executed?
Idol in the coconut. I think that the idol in the coconut is great game wise. I'm not so sure it's great television wise. I think that in the game, to have that you've walked past this tree so many times and you just never thought about the coconut that had a little bit of purple paint on it, and you're like, holy crap, that's the idol. That's got to be fun and exhilarating in real time in the physical game. I think in terms of TV, we've done, I think, more interesting things with the idols before, especially recently with the idol at challenges. That's so exhilarating. That's still the best wrinkle on the idol that I've seen in recent seasons. But even with Ko Rong and the idol in the tree and all of the effort that went into that, I know that people who hate the idol hunt were probably really thrilled that this was dealt with very quickly. But I just think it didn't play hugely television-wise for me. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought it was very so-so in terms of wait, that was it? I just felt like even in terms of how it was told to us in the preseason, that there was talk about shells, right, Josh? Am I making this up?
The three seashells, yeah.
Yeah, about the three seashells.
We don't know how those work. We still don't know.
I mean, is that something that's coming later, or was this the shells?
No, I think Jeff was speaking about how they're hidden in nature, and seashells were an example, and maybe we'll still see the three seashells at some point. Along the way in the future. But I think the idea is more it's hidden in nature. It's a natural object. You have no idea what it could possibly be. And so in this case, it was a coconut. Coconut on Gen X Beach. Maybe it's a shell on Millennial Beach. Who knows? I think that it must have been really, really exciting for David in that moment. And that's a really fun way to play the idol for the game itself. But as a piece on the show, I think it fell flat. I think it fell flat for at least me as a viewer. It was kind of just like, oh, well, there's the idol in that coconut that's right there that David was just able to find. I think it lost a little bit of the drama that you sometimes get from the idol hunt.
Okay, then Josh, Paul has this medical emergency in terms of the drama and whether or not Paul was going to stay in the game. Were you at the edge of your seat during that?
Well, I can't believe that he died. That's really crazy. I mean, that's what he said, right? He said, Dr. Joe brought this old pirate back from the dead.
Yes.
So we've got zombie Paul is on the island now, which I would, if I'm on the Millennials tribe, I'm very worried about the fact that Gen X has a zombie on their tribe. Mm-hmm. I wasn't especially worried. I mean, I was very impressed by how quickly the response was, how quick the response was to Paul, producers swooping in instantly. Dr. Joe is there very quickly. Probst never really shows up for these things. I feel like this is a response to everything that happened in Ko Rong. I feel like they must have really tightened that ship up. So I was never really super worried for Paul. I would have been really bummed if this was how Paul went, certainly because that's terrible. That's a terrible way for anybody's game to end. But we are, Gen X is being positioned as this is Paul's party. This is Paul's posse. And he's at the head of this 6-person alliance that's going on over here that Ken and David are trying to bust up. And I think it's less exciting if Paul is just, removed by medical injury than if they are able to figure out some way to topple him or if he's able to really keep the thumb down. I'd like to see that play out a little bit more. So I'm glad that it worked out the way that it did. And I was never really super concerned that he was going to be going home here.
Josh, is Paul the villain of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X?
I think it's too early to say. I think, certainly Figs and Taylor are villain-esque, at least for me right now, on Millennials.
Mullen-esque?
Jessica's eyes are villainous on Gen X right now for me. But I think in terms of like who's the heavyweight, you know, who is sort of like the first boss fight, I think Paul might be that right now, at least on Gen X. But I think that there's other candidates to pick up the torch if Paul were to be toppled quickly.
Yeah, I do think that he has like the traditional pre-merge sort of like Roger Sexton type thing going on. Where
that's what I'm feeling too. Yeah,
he could be the person who is really trying to like Brad Culpepper-esque, where he's trying to like get something going pre-merge and then he gets toppled before we get too far into the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I've got my locked up six. There's nothing you can do to stop me. I'm on top of the world. That person, for my money, usually has some sort of hard fall. And I could see, I mean, Paul already had a hard fall this week, but I could see it being a harder fall in terms of his game being over at some point soon. I don't see that lasting super long. So I think that, you know, it depends on your perspective. Like if you're really in on Chris and Brett and Sunday and Jessica and those guys, like you're rooting for Paul. But if you're a nerd like me, you're probably rooting for David. And I think that in this, you know, sort of David and Goliath story, Paul is certainly Goliath.
And then Josh.
And David is David, clearly.
And then Josh, this week from the previews, it looks like there's going to be some sort of twist in the game. Do you have an official call that you're willing to predict on what's happening on Wednesday night?
I like the idea that some of you guys have been floating out. You certainly said it on the podcast. I think it's been said a lot on Reddit and in the fan communities is this idea of, so they're going to break from 2 to 3. One tribe will be pure millennials. One tribe is pure Gen X.
Pure
one tribe is a mix. I think pure millennials sounds like a scary human being. I feel like that's good. And I think that keeps the theme alive. But certainly you still have one, you know, you have two pure tribes and then you've got one tribe where the social test is playing out internally. So I think that that's a cool idea. You've got the numbers for it to work right now. So I would like to see that. And I hope that that's what we're going to see. We'll see how it goes. I think that would be fun.
I'm excited to see how it plays out. All right, Josh, this season on The Wiggle Room, of course, we're doing feedback. You can email The Wiggle Room all week long, wiggleroom@robpizzawebsite.com. And we'll have questions for Josh. This week, we have a lot of questions from the Rob Pizza Podcast patron group. And so let me start off by asking you some of these. Jeremiah Panhorst.
Yes.
The great Jeremiah Panhorst.
Once Love up. Jeremiah.
Have you ever bailed on your buddies on bowling night to go hang out with your girlfriend?
Well, I shouldn't talk about my girlfriend because I'm married.
Sometimes women blind you.
Yeah, it happens.
Have I ever bailed on my buddies on bowling night to hang out with my wife is how I will change the question. No. I don't think that I've really been invited to many bowling nights in the time that I've been married. So no, I'm going to say that the answer is no. How about yourself, Rob?
No, I have never, ever.
Are you a bowling guy? Like when you're at like a bowling birthday party, are you really crushing it?
I mean, I probably haven't been to a bowling birthday party in about 25 years.
Wow. They're really fun. You should try them out.
No, but I have not ever bailed on my buddies to hang out with my girlfriend or my wife.
Yes, yes, yes.
No, because I've never been invited to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the problem. You have to get the invite.
In all seriousness, so that I was recently, that I was somewhere and I met somebody and then they asked me to go and like hang out on like, hey,
it's very vague. And I feel like if it were to be more specific, it would be a juicier story.
Well, not really. I just am trying to be less incriminating.
Okay.
But in turn, it's not anybody that you guys know on the podcast. But yeah, I was in like a very awkward situation where somebody was like, I felt like this is the first time I'm ever meeting this person. And they're saying like, hey, let's all go hang out sometimes and then we'll go and do this. And I'm like, well, what? Why would we do this?
Wow, how offensive of this person to ask you to hang out. What a real jerk this guy.
Yeah, there was going to be no podcasting.
Asking you to engage TV. In social interaction outside of the apartment. Unbelievable.
Yeah. What are we going to talk about?
I don't know.
I mean,
not the Jets game if you guys did poorly. You DVR'd it.
I have no idea if this person even watches football.
Uh-huh.
It was just like a blind, like, we don't even know if we like each other.
Well, this is how you find out. You get to know each other and you get to meet each other. Otherwise, like, you're never going to know. You may have passed up on a really good thing. You should have gone out to bowling night.
I don't even follow them on Twitter, or we're not even Facebook friends.
You can fix that. That's fixable. You can send a request. You can hit the follow button, Rob. You could do your research. Yeah. This could work out for you.
Yeah, I have no idea what shows they watch or anything like that. This was crazy.
Yeah, this feels more like a you problem to me. I got to be honest. This feels more like a Rob issue.
You would just meet like a stranger, and then all of a sudden you're going like, hey, let's just go and do something.
I don't know. Maybe if the stranger like was giving me good vibes, perhaps.
Yeah.
Were you getting bad vibes from the stranger? Bad stranger vibes? I felt like, of course, I'm on your side.
I got some intense vibes.
Intense vibes. No, you and intense don't match very
well.
You're not into the intense stranger. I'm okay with that. All right, that makes more sense. But if it was just like a pleasant human being who you were just starting to meet, it's like, yeah, why not?
No, let's go. Moving into way too fast.
Okay, so now we're at super intense. So super intense stranger, yes. Stay away from the SIS. You don't want to be involved with that.
All right. Nick Fishman is asking us, do you think that the twist that's upcoming would not be happening now if the same tribe lost both immunities? Had Gen X lost both immunities, how would you handle any twist as a production? So we've speculated on what the twist is going to be. Josh, do you have any sense of if Gen X went to the first two tribal councils, what they would do?
Well, if that were the case, like, you probably got to figure they're not doing it. And again, it's just speculation that like you wouldn't expect them to do one millennials, one Gen X, and one tribe of mixed in, because it just wouldn't be fair numerically. So it would probably just be, I think that we're going from two to three. Do you feel differently? It feels like
Survivor. But to KO, they went from two to three, and to KO lost the first two challenges.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, you would get like a, you know, like you would get like an anchor, like you would get a mixed tribe. Like, I think that the three tribes would be mixed of old Takeo and old Bion. I think that you would get three tribes of old millennials and old Gen Xers all mixed together, which wouldn't be testing the theme quite as easily, but I feel like that would be the fairer way to do it. So I think if Gen X had gone twice, I think that that's where we would be going, and still might be where we're going, but I really like the idea of doing one millennials, one Gen X, and one tribe at the center of the Venn diagram. I think that that's fun.
Jim Rosario wants to know, every year, the same thing happens. One player makes a quote-unquote big move, and suddenly everyone is claiming that Castaway has winner upside. I heard this last week on most of the recaps. Don't we have examples where big move players went out right around the merge? Are we overhyping? Do we in the podcast and recap community overvalue the big move, Josh?
Wow. Well, first of all, I thought that we had Jim blocked, so I'm surprised that his question came through. Very, very shocked about this. I think that, yeah, of course you see the big move player go out at the merge quite a bit. I mean, you guys were talking a lot about like the standard merge boot around, around the time that Nick was going to go. I remember that on Know It All's last season. I think that that happens a lot.
I wasn't sure what you were talking, which...
I think, you know, is it overhyped? Is it overblown? I think that you're looking for people to be making smart moves, and sometimes those moves are big, sometimes they're small. Like, for me, the person I'm most impressed with this week, or the people I'm most impressed with this week by far, are Michelle and Jay. And I think that that was a big move to protect their alliance, but I think it was also just a smart and shrewd move. That's the stuff that I'll value every day of the week. I think that for Will, that was smart. For Hannah, that was really smart to go where the numbers are. Those are kind of, you know, the quieter, unsung moves that are made in the context of a bigger move. So those are moves that I'm very excited about. But like, I don't know, are we talking, do you want to take like David as an example, somebody who has like a big moment of searching for an idol and finds an idol? Are we overblowing that guy as somebody who is going to be really big and powerful later on in the game or even in the near future? Maybe, but that's the story of the moment. You know, that's the story that's happening right now, and it's exciting right now, and who knows where it goes moving forward. But I don't know. I think that there is probably an inclination to hype the big move because it's exciting and that's what you're seeing at the time. And I think that there's also a lot of credit that's given to sort of trying to forecast what the fallout of something like that will be. So I think it's fair. I think that people are being fair.
Okay, a couple other questions. Justin Feinberg has a question. Should Figgy and Taylor be getting more credit than they have been currently getting for getting someone else to stick their neck out in front of everyone and flip the vote for them? Justin has pointed out that he feels like I, in particular, have not given Figgy and Taylor the credit they deserve for this flip.
I'm going to be Team Rob I will side with you. I will give them very little credit. I will give them very little credit for saving their own necks on this one. I think, like, for Michelle and Jay, who already felt like they could trust these two, who see them as a very obvious power couple, if Jay and Michelle have a tight thing and they are a quiet power couple, then of course, you know, keep that duo in as long as you can, while you can trust them, while you can lean on them, and while they are much bigger, obvious targets than you are. So I put all of the credit in their hands. I put pretty much nothing in Taylor and Figgy's hands, because I don't know where those hands have been. I don't want to touch them.
Whoa.
It may be dirty. Dirty drawers. Sandy
That's
drawers.
That's disgusting.
That's disgusting. It's gross. It's gross. It's gross. So I give no credit to
them. That's interesting.
I give them credit for being amusing, for great, being great, greatly entertaining, but no credit for surviving this week.
Also, from what I understand, that the players that were out there said that it was Figgy was trying to throw Jay under the bus. So if anything, it might have been a bad move for Jay to try to keep these people around, or at least it was a very patient move for him to say, okay, look, let me see if I could fix this with Figgy, because she's trying to throw my name under the bus. But apparently that had made Jay very paranoid, and that's why he was over talking to Zeke and Adam, and they were trying to make him feel better. And then he went and took that information and went back to everybody and said, hey, so Michaela is next after Figgy. And then that's where really the ball got rolling. But I don't think it was a plan where Figgy was like, hey, here's what we'll do. I'll tell everybody that I'm going after Jay, and then that'll get back to Jay, and then he'll act like he's upset, and then they'll tell him a bunch of things to make him feel better, and then he'll go back and tell everybody this other stuff. So way too much agency for Figgy and Taylor. I mean, other than they made friends with people on the first day, and good on them that they were likable enough to make a couple friends in the first couple days. But I mean, they were nowhere to be seen in any of the politicking that was going on after the challenge.
Yeah, and I think we can only really judge it by what's on the episode. I mean, all of that is, you know, from exit interviews and all of that stuff. So who really knows what actually happened? My sense is that the dynamics on the Millennials tribe are really complicated. Like, you get the sense that superfans Zeke and Adam are smart enough not to tell Jay what the plan is if Jay is so obviously part of the Triforce, right? Like, you would think that they are smart enough not to let him in on what's going on, unless, like, there's a lot of friendships at play and a lot of potential. Don't do that to me. I kind of know what that is. If there's a lot of potential alliances, and there has not been a vote yet, and they haven't been tested in that way, and we are certainly seeing an emphasis on Jay being really good buddies with Taylor and really wanting the thing with Taylor and Figgy and Michelle to work, but who knows what that looks like out there. They're all bonding, they're all going crazy, they're all losing their minds. So I think that it's too tough to say. I feel like it's probably a really complicated dynamic on what looks to be party beach here on the Millennials camp. So who knows? Who knows where that's going? But I think just in terms of what we were shown, I feel like we were shown nothing that indicates that Taylor and Figgy had a huge role in saving themselves. Other than Figgy, like, being able to be civil enough with Michaela for like 5 minutes to have that talk with her and Jay. But then that even almost blew up at Tribal Council. So I don't know. It was not a great look for either one of those two.
Okay. And then, finally, one last question. Lashana wants to ask, what do you think is the possible story between Michelle and Hannah going forward? I mean, yes, Michelle eventually included Hannah in the vote, but if I was her, I wouldn't be overjoyed. I mean, the fact is, Michelle didn't include Hannah in the vote beforehand, so that could be a couple of reasons. One is that Michelle knew that she didn't need or want Hannah's vote, but Michelle got nervous at Tribal with Michaela, so Hannah was a good insurance vote. Or Michelle knew that Hannah would be so paranoid and neurotic that she would tip off Mari. Neither is a particularly good look for Hannah as a potential alliance partner, so I'm curious to know how this will play out.
But I feel like it's a good look that Michelle was willing to bring Hannah in and to suggest vote for Mari, to tell her vote for Mari at Tribal Council, which is like a very dangerous place to air that kind of information out, especially recently where Tribal Council has been such a combustible situation in recent seasons. So I feel like Michelle sticking her neck out to bring Hannah into the party and to get Hannah in on the right side of the vote tells me that Michelle likes Hannah or wants Hannah to be on the right side of this thing. And I think it's really good on Hannah to have responded that way and to have voted for Mari, even though she might have liked Mari more. I think that she feels numbers are going this way. I ought to be on that side of it as opposed to being one of the three that is not in on the vote. And now I'm less likely to be the next immediate target. It's a very scary situation for Zeke and Adam right now, but I think Hannah could have been lumped into that pile. And I think she is at least third in line. That's, you know, two more people that are ahead of her. And you got to figure, you know, by the time that it would come to her, if things were to play out fairly straightforwardly, that some sort of swap or some sort of shakeup has occurred at that point. So I think it was a good look for Hannah. I think that it was a good look that Michelle was interested enough in maintaining a relationship with Hannah and Hannah's loyalty to include her in the vote and bring her along. And I think Hannah was savvy enough to decide I should probably go where the numbers are, even if it's my friend who's getting voted out.
But for Zeke and Adam, who do they feel most betrayed by? Is it Hannah?
I think that if Zeke and Adam are super fans of the game, that they will be able to wrap their heads around what Hannah did. If Hannah is able to, you know, cleanly articulate what just happened, which that's maybe up in the air because Hannah really goofs around a lot and gets flustered, it seems like. If she can cleanly articulate what happened at Tribal Council, what she was told, what she was informed was going on with the vote, if she can explain that and why she needed to just be on the right side of the numbers, I'd like to think that Adam and Zeke have watched enough Survivor and worshiped this show enough to know that you want to be on the right side of the numbers. And they really can't be picky right now. So if Hannah is still willing to make some sort of move with Zeke and Adam, if she's still willing to have some sort of working relationship with them, they really can't afford to be that angry about it. And they really don't have any power to be, you know, if they were furious, they've no power right now to really, you know, direct that fury toward Hannah. So I think that my hunch would be that they'll, you know, probably be annoyed about it. I think that they'll be disappointed. I don't think that they're going to like what Hannah just did. But I think that they, you know, I would like to think that they're smart enough to get over it. Maybe they're not, but that would be my guess.
Thanks once again for bringing us into the Wiggle Room for another week of Survivor. I know you've got so many different things.
Thank you.
That you were working on over on post-show recaps. So what a busy time of the year for you.
Oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year. Yeah, we've got about a hunch podcasts going on. No podcast about the 100. But a podcast with the 100 expert, Joe Garfine. Joe Garfine has joined me in podcasting about Westworld, the new HBO show. She was unavailable this week, so her co-pilot on her 100 podcast, AJ Mass, who all of you guys know and love, he helped me recap the first episode of Westworld, so we've got a podcast about that. That's up on post-show recaps right
Westworld's
now.
Westworld's apart.
Westworld's apart. That's a great season. West Nail World's apart is where you've got me talking. Yeah, now you're speaking my language. That's my season. West Nail World's apart is really what's happening. Oh God, I love that late game hashtag. That's really good. I love that season.
Oh,
it's really
my circuits
fantastic.
Are taco overloading.
Yeah, do not feed the robots tacos, please. Stay away. Yeah. I have no follow-ups. I was going to say we're also doing a Luke Cage podcast with Kevin Maedeo, but that's secondary information now.
Can you explain, Luke Cage, this is another character that just didn't have anything else going on, and they just made a show about him?
What do you mean he had nothing else going on?
I don't know from anything. Explain to me who Luke Cage is.
Luke Cage was on Jessica Jones. If you've seen Jessica Jones, you already know who Luke Cage is.
This is a spinoff from another Marvel show?
It's a spinoff from another Marvel show. He's like the co-lead of Jessica Jones, or one of the leads on Jessica Jones. He is a superhero with tons of history in Marvel Comics. First appears in the 1970s, traditionally known as Power Man. We've moved away from Power Man, and now he just goes by Luke Cage. The Marvel Netflix shows really like to do the gritty thing, so we stay away from the superhero names as often as we can. But Luke Cage is a badass played by Mike Coulter, who is a big, beautiful man who is super, super powerful and has like unbreakable skin and is really, really strong and is very reluctant to be a hero. He doesn't really like doing the heroics thing. He's a fugitive from the law. All sorts of cool stuff going on with Luke Cage. Really fun show. 3 episodes deep so far. Really liking it. You would like it too. Remy Danton from House of Cards is the bad guy.
Well, that's pretty good.
Oh, he's great. He's fantastic. Yeah.
Any relation to Johnny Cage?
No. Okay. But Nicolas Cage actually did take his stage name from Luke Cage because he's such a Luke Cage fan. So his name is not actually Nicolas Cage. He took the cage from Luke Cage. That sounds like a joke, but it's actually not. It's real.
Okay. And then, of course, Josh and I got to talk about Mr. Robot on post-show recaps as well. We posted that over the weekend. Plus, we've also got our Fear the Walking Dead finale recap up on post-show recaps.
Speaking of zombies, how would Zombie Paul do on Fear the Walking Dead? He'd be pretty good.
Yeah, he would be good.
He'd instantly be one of the best characters on that
show. Instantly would be one of the best characters. I mean, he would be like a really good antagonist on Fear the Walking Dead. He would just be like, well, we're doing things my way now.
Yeah.
They call me the treasure hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. You could show up on his boat.
Yeah. Now I've got my metal detector and I found all the treasure in the world now.
Yeah. That treasure's going to be pretty worthless. I don't really know what you're
We're trading it for Oxy.
Yeah. Oh, that's only funny for people who watch Fear the Walking Dead. And I hope that's not a lot of you.
Yeah. All right. So, Josh, the hashtag is Westworld. Nail worlds apart.
You could go West Nail Worlds Apart, or if you just want to do West Nail World, I'd be happy as well. But yeah, I'm happy with that. That makes me very happy.
Hey,
let's do that.
You got to risk it to get the biscuit.
Yeah, that's the tagline of Westworld, actually. It's so strange.
Okay. All right. Great job, Josh. You can follow Josh Wiggler on Twitter. He is at Round Howard. Coming up next, we got a lot of podcasts still even before we get to Survivor. I'm going to have a podcast with Big Meech. That's a Big Brother person, Josh.
Okay.
She was from Big Brother 18. We're going to talk about some Big Brother 18, but also Big Brother Over the Top.
Meech.
Yes, that is going to be coming up on Tuesday at
6 p.m. I tried watching Over the Top, by the way.
How'd that go?
I can't figure out how to watch it. I don't understand. Like, I was on CBS All Access, but what is it, a clip show? How does this work?
I know.
There's like a 15-minute video on there, and then that didn't seem like an episode length, and then there's a lot of Meet the Cast, and I was just confused.
I know. You're waiting with your Bravo All Access subscription for Over the Top Chef.
Yes, that's what I'm waiting for. Bravo All Access is underrated.
Underrated. Anyway, we have Big Brother coming up on Tuesday. Then Stephen Fishback and I are going to be getting into week 7 of the Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls.
How's that going for you?
Oh, Josh, it's day 40 something. We have our classic merge boot time. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard that you just passed day 39, but that means you still have about 100 more days to go.
Yeah. We've got our second person on the jury, day 39, you know, typical Survivor. Yeah. You know how it goes. And then
I'm about 2 weeks behind on Australian Survivor.
It's only like 10 episodes, right?
It would take me forever to catch up. So I think I'm out on Australian Survivor officially.
And then also we're going to be doing a Tuesday night news AF. And then top of the order, once again, Survivor Know-It-Alls is back on Wednesday night. And then Otis Bushkauskas is going to be here in the studio with me on Thursday, and then voicemails with Haley Strong. So it should be fun week of podcasting.
Strong
week of podcasting. Yes. So looking forward to all of that. Can't wait to hear what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody.
Kidding,
bye.
Guys.
It's the biggest blind side of the season so far. Sorry, Mari.